Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, how are you? Welcome into another Tech Talk. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Tech Talk, of course, our regular opportunity to catch up with the world of technology. We're always keen to hear how it's going for you. If you'd like to contact the programme, you can do that by email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up, this time, we'll be finding out about the difference that the right lighting can make if you are partially sighted. Hubert Pavarkovich will be trying out a directory of accessible apps. Plus, we'll be catching up with some of your listener emails. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Jackie Brown, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavarkovich. Good to have you all with us. Let's just go round and see what's on your mind this week. Jackie, what's going on with you?
I think it's time I introduced everybody to Jackie's Tech Toys table. It is a table in my office, and it normally is the place where I would bring something upstairs and unpack, unbox, if it's a techie toy, box it up if it's an evaluation and have to go back. But it's a place where all my tech toy evaluations and everything happen. And sometimes it can be virtual as well. So if there's something I'm working on in my head, I might sit at the tech table and drum my fingers on it or whatever. But I think it's time that the listeners knew about Jackie's tech toy table.
It's good to have a dedicated space and stay a bit organized. All those boxes and packaging and cables and making sure that if you're evaluating stuff, the right thing stays with the right product.
Yeah, making sure you take it out of the box so you know how to put it back, because that can often be a bit of a jigsaw.
I'm glad that's not just me. I can never get things back in packaging. You get something and it's packaged beautifully and it's all neat and nice and it fits in really well. Never goes back the same way for me.
Well, you leave something out when you're about to put the sellotape back on, you know, over the parcel.
Yeah.
You leave something, I've left out the manual, or I've left out this paper bag or, you know, plastic bag that belongs to. So it's a nice space for me to just keep everything together. And it's where, as I say, the exciting toys come in and I want to have a play with them.
I find I have to show a little bit of restraint. You know, when you get a new piece of technology, if there's a chance that you might be returning it, you have to unpack it real slow, don't you? Because if you dive in because you're so excited and eager. I remember when I got the Meta Ray-Bans, for example, and I was a little bit concerned that they weren't going to be for me, you know, because I hadn't really had smart glasses before, and I was quite cautious, and I was... Yeah, just unpack those really, really slowly because I was so excited. I wanted to just rip them open and get going straight away. You know, that's usually the case. So what's on there just now, Jackie? What's on your tech table at the moment?
The tech table at the moment has something virtual. So that's kind of in my head. So I have been reading up a lot about the new Google Pixel phones. And one of them in the next couple of weeks is going to land on that tech table. So at the moment, it's kind of looking forward to it, reading up about all the Google Pixel 9s. There are about three or four of them, different variations. So I've gone for the 9 Pro because I want to have a foot in both camps, iOS and Android. This is a very popular debate and it can get quite heated with people sometimes who are Apple fanboys versus, you know, Android addicts. And, you know, it can be, you know, kind of competitive, but I think that they are both so good now in terms of accessibility that I don't think there's anything between them. I think one thing might do something a bit better than the other and so on. But I like a foot in both camps. So that's why I've ordered the Pixel 9 Pro.
The Pixel 9 has sparked a debate about some of the AI photography features that have been introduced, where you can add yourself to a photograph that you've taken, or you can alter the photograph in a, you know, we always used to say, oh, you could Photoshop it, you know, if you wanted to modify a photograph. But it seems like AI now takes that to another level. And there is a sort of philosophical debate about how much of this, you know, can you believe any photograph? And I guess the same will apply to audio in the future as well. Can you believe anything that comes out of a computer?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the most interesting thing for me about Android at the moment is the assistant Gemini. It's going to have a lot more context. You know, for example, you might ask when was Joe Biden, who's the current president in America, when was Joe Biden born? And it will give you the answer. And you say, what's his date of birth? Or where does he live? And, you know, it puts it in context. And I think that's really quite exciting to see that, you know, coming along, how good it's going to be, and obviously how much of it is hype on Google's part. But I have heard it being demoed and it does sound really quite good. So we'll watch that space.
Well, Jackie, keep us posted about anything new arriving on your tech table. We're always keen to hear about that. Callum Stoneman, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Yeah, doing good. It's a similar sort of thing for me, actually, that's grabbed my attention from the Google event. I mean, the hardware was, you know, it looks brilliant. The Pixel 9 and the Pixel 9 Pro and the different variations of those. I mean, hardware-wise, I think it was, although they're good, it was nothing revolutionary hardware-wise, you know, usual sort of thing, faster, better battery life, you know, faster processor, more RAM, usual sort of thing. But what grabbed me, though, was also the Gemini stuff. And one of the things that got demoed was they took a photo of a leaflet, like an advertisement for an event, and then said, tell me about this event, and also tell me if I'm free to attend it. So then Gemini obviously took the photo, analysed it, got all the details, but also checked the calendar and came back and, you know, could tell you if you were available or not. And I love that sort of thing. I think this for me is what I've been waiting for. AI that can tie into, you know, your system and your data. I know there's a lot of questions around privacy with that. I don't know how much of that is being done on device compared to going off to the cloud. But don't get me wrong, all these uses for, like, you know, creating images and creating poems and funny songs and, you know, summarizing documents is all great. But I just want to be able to have a conversation about my emails or the things that are on my calendar or the locations that I'm due to go to. I want AI to be, you know, to have all of that and be able to tell me about all that and give me more context. So again, we don't know how much of that is hype, but I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes.
Indeed. And Chrome OS, of course, that's the operating system, is improving support for PDFs by using AI to make those more accessible. So definitely accessibility wins, but also, you're right, productivity wins coming with AI as well. So the gift that keeps on giving. Hubert?
Well, speaking of things landing on your toy tech table, something that will be landing on my table of some description soon is, hopefully, I'm getting a new set of what I like to call outdoor headphones, purely because my Sony Link Buds started to badly distort, and I think I need to investigate a change. And I'm currently looking at the Shox Open Run Pro, I believe they're called. So I'm currently looking at purchasing these and going back to bone conduction.
It doesn't feel that long ago that you got some new headphones, Hubert.
They were my studio headphones. I've got about different pairs of headphones for different things, but yeah, they were my studio headphones that I recently upgraded. But now it's my outdoor headphones that need an upgrade, it seems.
The fact that you're getting headphones with the word run in the title, does that suggest a new level of exercise?
Well, walking carries on. To be honest, at the speed that Caesar the guide dog has, you could technically say I'm running, but yeah, I guess.
Ah, indeed. Yeah, well, I've played with the Shox headphones and they're pretty good. If you like bone conduction headphones, they can be a little bit Marmite. Not everybody gets on with... do you like bone conduction headphones, Jackie?
I have a pair of Shox Open Fit. Now, these are like little loopy ones that go over your ears and, you know, sit on the cheekbones. I like those just for something very, very portable to carry if I'm going on the bus. But to be honest with you, I like to listen to music when I'm sort of on the bus, you know, stationary somewhere. So I'm not a big fan, but I do like them for the purpose that it does keep your ears open. It does let you hear, you know, announcements on trains or buses or things like that. But for listening to music, you can't beat a good pair of maybe the Solo Beats or the Sony XM5s, you know, the WH-1000 XM5s. They're my kind of go-to headphones for in the house, but you wouldn't want to walk about with those outside. So, yeah, they have their uses. They have their place.
And, of course, there's the new Pixel Buds as well that have been announced. So I haven't heard those yet, but let us know if you have heard any decent headphones recently and how do you use them. Do you have different headphones for different occasions? techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Jackie, Callum, Hubert, thank you so much. Settle in. It's another Tech Talk. Out and about with RNIB's inclusive design lead, Robin Spinks, who is himself low vision. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to ask Robin about some of the lighting solutions that he, as a low vision guy, leans into and uses on a regular basis. Welcome in, Robin. Good to have you back on RNIB Connect Radio and good to be travelling together again.
Absolutely. Great to see you, Dave. And yeah, lighting, my goodness, there are so many solutions. But, you know, a couple of things I wanted to mention here today that I've recently had experience with. And the first one is called Lanishblier, and that is spelt Lane, L-A-N-E, S-P-E-A-R-E, Lanishblier, and Swedish IKEA product. And it's all about lighting and filming, because all of us have to do Zoom calls, Teams calls, FaceTime calls. And, you know, have you ever wanted to make sure that the lighting actually is not only comfortable for you as a low vision person, but also illuminates you in the right way? And this, essentially, this device allows you to do both of those things. So you can have 16 different combinations of white light, from a warm light, a daylight, a regular white light, and a cool white light at four different intervals. It's got a tactile switch. When you switch it off, it remembers the preset that you had the last time. And essentially, if you think about it physically, it's a round, large round base, which is weighted with a flexible gooseneck arm attached to it. And you have a smartphone clamp on one arm, and then you have another outer ring and clamp that has the light on it. So essentially one sits inside the other. The arm with the smartphone holder sits inside the arm that holds the light. And fantastic piece of kit. I've been using it every day since I got it. In fact, I've already bought a second one. It's been that useful. And it was 35 quid. So you could buy yourself a filming light for twice that money, and it might not be good. But I'm quite a fan of IKEA, I have to say. They typically get things right when it comes to simple functional design, and I think this is a really nice example. Not targeted at accessibility users, of course, just a nice, I would argue, inclusively designed product.
So this is a light that we could use while on video calls on Teams or Zoom or FaceTime, just to make sure that your face is well lit and is evenly lit as well. Many of us make sure that the light's on or the curtains are open, you know, or you've got the reflection from the laptop screen. But this is going to improve the experience for the viewer when they're looking at you. I always say I've got the perfect face for radio. But can you just explain, you mentioned those different types of white light there. For me as a blind person, I don't fully understand that. So when you say a warm light or a, you know, what sort of light should I be aiming for, and what does that mean for the viewer?
So there's a number of things here. I mean, firstly, for me, I would tend to find, as someone who's quite photophobic, that, you know, a cool or bright white light is a little bit too harsh. So I tend to like a warmer, more like a bronzy white light. And I can change that to the level, the intensity level that suits me. It's all about comfort, Dave, to be honest. If you're, you know, if you're photophobic and you're looking into a filming light, it can be horrendous, really discomforting, and it can completely throw your ability to give your best in the interview. So I can achieve a nice soft bronzy light that illuminates me enough for the viewer, but it also means that I'm not experiencing any discomfort. So it's about dialing it. It's about being able to dial it in to a level that works for you as an individual, but also achieves the desired result in terms of making sure that you're illuminated. Because none of us want to be, you know, like a sort of dark, dimly lit figure in a conversation where there's multiple other contributors and they're all, you know, really visible and just kind of looking their best. So it's about enabling you to feel confident, but also feel comfortable as someone with low vision. The other thing I should mention is it's got a USB-A power source, so you plug it into your laptop or power brick or whatever, and that's quite convenient rather than it being another plug.
Right, and is this suitable for mobile devices as well, or is it just for your laptop?
It is absolutely geared towards mobile devices. So the clamp that it comes with, the spring-loaded smartphone clamp, that will accept, I mean, it's accepted any size of phone that I've put into it, and I've got quite a collection from sort of large phablet style devices down to what would be like ultra compact phones nowadays. So it can actually securely hold any of those devices.
Okay, so that's the Lanespear, Lanespeare, available from IKEA, the consistent lighting solution for those online video calls and video conferences. What else are you finding helpful in the world of lighting just now, Robin?
Well, you know, lighting, if you've got low vision, I think lighting matters absolutely everywhere. Too much of it is a problem for some people, too little of it is a problem for others. And a lot of us are probably somewhere in the middle where too much is too much and too little is too little. You've got to find out what works right for you. But you know what? When I'm in the lounge on a Friday evening after a busy week at work and I want to just chill out and relax, I want the lighting to be really nice. And it's not just a case about making it comfortable. I want to be able to experiment with different colours, just create different moods, for example. And the product that I've been using there and really enjoying is made by Govee, which is G-O-V-E-E. And it's called the Govee LED Floor Lamp. So it's got a weighted base that you can get it in either silver or black. Very, very discreet looking thing. It just looks like a metal pole with a sort of plasticky white strip running right up the center of it. Very unobtrusive, melts into the background with your decor. When you turn it on, you've got the opportunity to create literally hundreds of thousands of different combinations of light color and light pattern. You can choose from pre-selected ones, or you can create your own custom light pattern. So you might want to have a very gentle pulsating rainbow effect, for example. I like a soft magenta light in the evening. It's really relaxing. But you know what, if you've got a favorite color, or if a particular color works well for your sight condition, the lovely thing here is you can create it. You can create that color. And what I've tried to do is have the light reflecting off a white wall so that you then get a diffused light, soft light, throughout your whole room. And, you know, it's one of those things, I think, for all of us, you really got the chance to just play with lighting and dial it in, find out what is absolutely right for you, find out what you like, you know. And you can create presets. You can do this on the device. You can also use an app with it, the Govee lighting app, where you can save your favorites. And what's really useful is you also have an old school, very handy little remote which magnetically attaches to that light pole, and you can have your most commonly used colors and your on and off in there. So if you can't find your phone or you don't want to interact with it, you can also use voice control, so you can connect it up to the A-Lady or the other one from Google, and you can control the lights that way. So you've got massive amount of flexibility and customization. And it's fun. You know, if you like lighting and you like to change the look of the environment that you're in, the world is your oyster.
So how would I create, you know, if I were to go out and buy one of these devices, the Govee lamp, it's a sort of a tall lamp by the sounds of it, with a remote control and everything. How would I go about creating a mood. Maybe, I don't know, perhaps I want to create like a romantic mood or something like that.
Yeah, so there are a number of presets that you can use, and you can voice command those, but you can also go into the app. The unit, I should say, is about, I think it's about maybe 1.2 meters tall. Don't quote me on it, but right. Roughly that. So it kind of just melts into the background, and they've designed it that way. So someone coming in looking at your room, they might be aware of a sort of matte silver or black, depending on what you've gone for color-wise, pole just kind of pointing upwards from the floor. So it's very unremarkable, just melts into the background. So you'd create that inside the app, and you've got the opportunity to save it. So you could give it a favorite or memorable name as a lighting theme, and then you could use the voice control to command the app, and you could request the name of your chosen theme that you've created.
Okay.
But it's a never-ending kind of fountain of opportunities for different lighting shades and lighting patterns as well. So whatever your preference, whether it's for dynamic lighting where the lighting is moving, or whether it's for, you know, a static shade that you particularly like or find comfortable, you can create it. I think that's one of the amazing things with LED lighting, is it just allows you endless customization and flexibility, and for me that's what it's all about.
The world's moved on a bit since the days of lava lamps and all of that.
Oh, good old lava lamps. We remember them with great fondness, although you had to be really careful, didn't you, because you couldn't knock them over. They were quite dangerous at one point, weren't they?
So presumably the Govee doesn't get hot.
Not at all. No, it's I've had it on for many hours and it's just as cool as a cucumber, no heat at all. So And very, very little power. So, you know, it's very energy efficient, as is the case with LED lighting, typically.
Mm. And just before we wrap up, Robin, it's perhaps worth remembering that most of us are actually carrying a light in our pockets.
Absolutely. You know, and I was reminded of that recently, Dave, because I had a fantastic weekend, a couple of weekends ago in Galway. If anyone listening hasn't been to Galway, you really have to go and visit. What a fantastic place. We're having a weekend there, but the apartment we arrived at, long story, but there was no power available, so there was no lighting. We didn't want that to spoil our evening, so yours truly nipped out and picked up some burgers and some Prosecco, and we came back and we had the evening with a bottle of Prosecco and our burgers and the LED torch from my phone pointing up at the freshly painted white ceiling, which created a lovely diffuse white light, and all we needed was Farron Cotton's 90s bangers on BBC Sounds, and we're set for a perfect evening. So always remember, you've got a torch in your pocket. And interestingly, what we're starting to see with phone torches, and we're seeing this with iOS 18 that's just coming along, is that not only have you got the torch, but you've now got the opportunity to enhance and customize the beam of the torch, whether you want to widen it or narrow it. So it'll be really interesting to see in a few months' time what people are doing with that and what change that ultimately affects. But you know, the simple light in your pocket, I'm always using it when I walk with the kids to football training. When the dark nights, we tend to use it. We walk through a wooded area and we're using it to just watch out for wildlife. I can't usually see the wildlife, but the boys can see it, and they'll tell me what's just to kind of come into our path. But it's all about exploration and discovery, and yeah, lighting's a great resource. So dive into it, have a play, and see what you can do, and see whether it can maybe make your environment a bit better. It can enable you to use your vision a bit better, and you know, just enable you to feel comfortable and good. So go and try and explore, and you never know what you might discover.
Brilliant, Robin. Thank you so much. And we're really keen to hear from you. Are you making any creative use of lighting? What are you doing to illuminate your environment? Have you found an interesting smart light that you'd like to share with us on Tech Talk? We'd love to hear from you. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Robin Spinks, low vision guy and RNIB's inclusive design lead, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Time now on Tech Talk to talk AppleVis, or more importantly, what could possibly replace AppleVis? So I'm going to show you something that I have seen recently. Now, I've mentioned this on Tech Talk in our tech inventory recently, and it is all about the AppleVis app directory. Now, what this is where a lot of people, and that could be people that ran AppleVis or the members of the AppleVis community, could submit apps entries for apps on the App Store, whether it's Mac, whether it's iOS App Store, and that they could also talk about what the app is and also its accessibility and give it an accessibility rating, which would then give people a good idea as to whether an app is accessible, whether it's worth getting or whether it isn't worth getting. Now, that is something that people will miss very much with the closure of AppleVis. However, a company called iAccessibility, who we have mentioned, has tried to come up with a replacement. We will be having an interview with iAccessibility in the nearby future, hopefully, so keep the ears peeled for that one. But today, I will actually give you a quick walkthrough of the iAccessibility app, just so you can see what some of the app entries look like, but also what else they offer within the app.
iAccessibility, active. Search field.
So we are currently in the home screen of iAccessibility. I'll show you what we've got here.
Home, heading, iAccessibility menu, button.
So we've got iAccessibility menu where you can see their website or their social media channels or find out more about the company. And it brings up a pop-up dialog with all of these options.
Home, heading.
Home screen.
Toggle live stream on, button.
So they've got a live stream that is sometimes available. That is a function I have not used often, but it is there.
Show podcast player, dimmed, button.
There's a podcast player, which is currently dimmed because there's no podcast currently playing.
Search field. Actions available.
Then there's the search field. You can search the various posts and podcasts.
Seeing AI 2 days ago.
So now we are in the posts screen, and some of this will be a mixture of app directory entries and other posts about other topics. But I want to show you more of the app entries here. So let's type on Seeing AI.
Home, back button.
So I'll take us to the top and let's swipe and see what we've got.
Article, heading, play episode, dimmed button.
So that button's dimmed because it's not a podcast episode.
Share button. Seeing AI, image, possible. Seeing AI, app name, heading level 2. Seeing AI, app version, heading level 2, 5.3. Platform, heading iOS/iPadOS. Category, heading level 2.
So I'm currently swiping through the screen to the right.
Productivity. Description. Heading. Seeing AI is a free app that narrates the world around you. Designed with and for the blind and low vision community, this ongoing research project harnesses the power of AI to open up the visual world by describing nearby people, text and objects. Seeing AI provides tools to assist with a variety of daily tasks. Bullet short text. Speaks text as soon as it appears in front of the camera.
So there's the description of the app. We will silence it because we've talked about this app enough.
http://questions/feedback/or/feature/request. Seeing AI at Microsoft, full stop.
So I'm swiping through the description parts.
Free or paid, heading level 2, free. Devices you tested on, heading left, iPhone 13. Accessibility rating, heading 5, fully accessible. Accessibility comments, specially designed for the blind. Screen reader performance. Screen reader fully supported. Button labeling. All buttons clearly labeled.
So as you can see, a lot of it is very similar to what you would find on an AppleVis app directory entry.
Usability. Heading. Very usable. App store links. https://. Developer website. https://. Enjoying the article. Leave a tip. 99 pence. Button. Vertical scroll bar. 5 pages. Selected. Home. So tab. 1 of 3.
That is that.
Accessible. Seeing AI.
So that is a brief example of an app directory entry, but there are many others you can swipe through on here. Some of them have already been entered for many other apps, and people are constantly adding apps. I know there's an entry for the Weather Gods app and a few other apps amongst many others. Even some Windows apps too. So it's not just iOS and iPadOS, which is quite interesting. What I want to show you is also some tabs. We've got 3 tabs at the bottom of the screen.
Selected. Home. Tab. 1 of 3.
Bottom left-hand corner's home. Swipe to the right from that.
iAcast. Tab. 2 of 3.
iAcast. So that is the iAccessibility podcasts, where they do audio on various resources, which is quite a nice resource to have a look at. This includes demos, conversations, and a few various things like that. Definitely worth a listen.
Report tab, 3 of 3.
Then a report. Now, in the report tab, you've got reports on various different topics. Let me show you.
Search feed, roadmap, 7 hours ago. Logging into the Discord desktop app using a mobile device, 9 days ago. The end of an era, reflecting on the closure of AppleVis, 22 days ago. Voice activated showdown, Google Assistant actions versus Amazon Alexa skills, 10 months ago.
So it's not a section that's updated very frequently, but you do have some interesting articles to read there as comparisons, which is quite good.
IA Cast, tab 2 of 3.
Let me quickly show you this tab.
iAccessibility menu, search, unmute presents digital bytes, sharing apps, taming app chaos and recording with Vocaster, 1 day ago. Unmute presents Jonathan Price unmuted, 4 days ago. Unmute presents introducing Mac Chat, your new Mac show, 5 days ago. Unmute presents community replay on the 13th of August, 7 days ago. Technically working TW73, podcasting tools, 8 days ago.
So you've got various podcast episodes that you can listen to if you wish. So quite an informative app with a lot of resources and information that you can utilize, which is quite nice. And it is in an app form. Now, when it comes to adding entries to the app directory, I believe this cannot be done through the app. I have not found it. So my understanding is you actually have to go to iAccessibility.net. You can get an account on that website, I believe, and then add entries yourself there if you wish, I believe. So that's one thing to do. But you can browse the content and enjoy all of it in the iAccessibility app. So I recommend you give it a go. It's a good resource, certainly, and it sounds like a resource that will be constantly developing and improving. So I would say definitely something to get onto your phone, because I think it will certainly grow quite considerably, and it's quite a large community of users when it comes to technology. So I think there's a lot of useful information that you can find there already, and I think potential for plenty more information in the future. So that is the iAccessibility app.
Thanks to Hubert Pavalkovich there. And just a reminder, we will be speaking to iAccessibility in the future, so keep your ears peeled.
Making technology accessible. Tech Talk.
This is Dave Williams in Frankfurt, and I am with the Braille Working Group of the European Blind Union, the leader of who is Rainer, and Rainer joins us now. Welcome in, Rainer, to RNIB Connect Radio. Just tell me a little bit, if you would, about the Braille Working Group of the European Blind Union. Who are they and what do they do?
Yeah, hello, I'm Rainer Delgado. I'm very happy to talk with you and to people can listen to me in the UK. And I work for the German Federation of the Blind and Partially Sighted for many different things. One thing is the topic of Braille. We, for example, created a Braille course for adults who became blind, and we do a workshop now for Braille teachers and so on. And yes, since I don't remember exactly, let's say 3 years, I lead this group. It was rebuilt 1 year before, and then I became the leader. And we have here now 8 persons, and in total we have 2 more who could not attend, so from Sweden and from France, and we hear from Czech Republic, from Slovakia, from UK, Dave, from Belgium, and Spain, and Germany.
Right, and who are these people, right? Are they're all representatives from their Braille authorities? I know one guy is a teacher. Just tell us a little bit about the composition of the group.
Yeah, so let's say, like, for example, Anna from Spain, she works in ONCE, in this Federation of the Blind, in the Department of Braille, and they organize things in the development of Braille and the support on Braille and teaching Braille and so on. Michal of Slovakia, he works in the Braille Library of Slovakia, and also is in the Slovak Braille Authority. but also is in the Belgium or Dutch speaking Braille Authority and works for any surface. So he gives advice on a digital accessibility. So it's quite diverse.
Yeah, and Bart also brings a lot of standards expertise as well, because he's involved with the International Standards Organization as well, the ISO standards. Why is it important, do you think, Rainer, that groups like this exist? Why do we need to spend lots of money and go on airplanes and stay in hotels, right? Because people listening at home will be thinking, you guys are just having fun and whatever, right? Which is, it, you know, I'm not going to pretend, you know, otherwise. It is always lovely to meet people and to travel. But what is the serious reason why a group like this is necessary?
Yeah, so first I was asked if I would take part in this group, and I entered, and there was a lot of discussions, and we practically we did not do so much. And when I took over the leading, in my work, I always want to change something in the world. So, and this is my purpose for this group also. And we have just ideas. Like we made a video about Braille in different languages, English of course too. You find it on YouTube and the EBU YouTube channel, for example.
And that's for promoting Braille and the value and the helping everybody understand. And it means that every country can use that video. It's not just like we duplicate effort, we make one resource together and then everybody can benefit from it.
Working on an international level, it's always a bit difficult because we have this, we work in one language, we work in English. That's quite convenient for the UK, but for other countries it might be difficult. And so we always have to consider this, what we do, does it really help the people in the countries? And I hope this video helps people, or mainly sighted people, because it's a video, to understand what is Braille, how does it work, how do you get Braille, how can you make Braille, and so on, and to tell this to their relatives who became blind, or to their blind children, or so on. That was the purpose of this video. Another thing is this livingbraille.eu forum, where everyone can share his and her experience on Braille. So if I get a new Braille display and I'm very convinced of this, I can write an article, or if, I don't know, if I have a technique to label the things at home in Braille, which is not used so far, then I can write it there and inform others about it, and so on and so on.
Right, so even people who are not in the group can go on to livingbraille.eu, and it's a forum that allows everyone in the Braille community across Europe to share our findings and opinions.
Right, yeah, you can, of course you can read at all, but you can register and then you can write, and you can produce your own content and tell about your experience. Let's say our topic now is a bit the speed reading, and if you think you have found a technique to read very quick, then you could put a small article and tell the others how you do it.
Right, because we're so thinly spread, right? Because Braille's not a common thing, and so actually having this central hub, we can access the rest of the community and all that expertise that's out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about last year. The working group published a position paper.
Ah, yeah. It's a long position paper. I think it's 11 pages, and we tried to summarize everything that you can say about Braille, like more in a political way. So that every child has to learn Braille, that every adult who becomes blind has to learn Braille, that you have to get a Braille display paid, and so on and so on, that you have that we need more Braille in public spaces. So it's things that we all know that we need it, and it's all gathered there. And so if you're working politically, you can take this paper and say, the EBU, all the blind people of Europe think that these are the main important points that have to happen.
Right. So that document is a tool, hopefully, that individuals and organizations can use to try and hopefully make the case and persuade others of the value of Braille? Because that was my question. How much influence does a document like that really have?
The document itself, it does not have any influence, I guess.
It's how we use it.
Yeah. It's just that if you talk to politicians, you can take this document and say, here, everyone in the world or everyone in Europe says that it's important to have this. And then you can say, for example, in this country, people get paid 80 cell Braille display for their work. Why don't we have it here in our country? Something like this. And then you can use this paper. It does not solve any problem, but it could help you a bit in your political work.
Right. And we are, I think, as a group, trying to establish a bit of a mandate for ourselves by reaching out to Braille display users. There was a survey over the winter that was open for 3 months where I think nearly 1,000 users of Braille displays contributed feedback and their experiences, and the results are now in.
Yeah, the initial point was we said that electronic Braille is the most important channel of Braille in the future. So it's much more easier to get Braille on your Braille display than to get it printed on paper, delivered by your library and so. But the access to electronic Braille is often quite difficult. If you want to read a book, so you can buy an e-book like Kindle or iBook or whatever, and then the difficulties start how you can read it on your Braille display conveniently. And for this, our purpose is to improve this access to electronic Braille. And the first step was to ask people, what are your problems? What are your suggestions to improve this access to electronic Braille? And then we got a lot of answers, more than 900, and evaluated a bit in different fields, like using the Braille display with computer, with smartphone, or a standalone device, and we got a lot of ideas what could be improved. And we are just here in our meeting now talking about what are the next steps. Yesterday we talked to Braille display producers, and this is the first contact in such an official way between a representative body of Braille display users, of clients, and these producers. And we hope that we can continue this contact and then bring our points to them. And it's, for example, the issues we are talking about is the quality of the displays, which seems to be decreasing a bit. then the connectivity between display and any device, and the training and instruction, for example, how to use your Braille display with screen reader or whatever.
Okay, so lots of areas to work on, and I guess we need to keep those channels of communication open with both the community of Braille users, but also the industry of Braille manufacturers, and of course screen reader companies as well, because that's an important part of your Braille reading experience very often.
Yeah, and this is a thing that we can do on an international level, because these companies are international working, and we can come together as the blind community and say, we are a lot of clients, and we as a group represent them, and we talk to them, and now we bring our suggestions to you as producers, and I hope that will really change a bit the market.
For blind people listening across the UK and across Europe, in fact, how can we get everybody involved? How can people participate in this movement?
So what I said already is this livingbraille.eu forum, where everyone can read and write and get a lot of ideas what to do and so. And a thing where we really want to involve as many people as possible is the next year. It's the anniversary of Braille. So it was invented 200 years ago by Louis Braille. And we want to run an an online campaign where we can post each day, every day, one thing about Braille. So a poem, a story, a report on personal experience on Braille, a video or an audio where someone is Braille reading, Braille games and ideas how to use Braille. So we want to publish a lot of things, and things that are sent by users. So I want to invite you all to send us your things, anything creative you can spread connected to Braille.
Okay, and is there a form or an email address or somewhere? How do we do that?
Yep. So the next year is not so close.
Right. So there will be more information.
Yeah, we will create a call in autumn, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So watch this space, and there will be a news story on the livingbraille.eu website, I'm sure, when that.
Of course. Yeah. So this should be the base where we will publish everything, and then we want to publish it also in many social media channels. And then we have always a link to a homepage where you can find the details.
Well, Rainer, I just want to extend my personal thanks to you and the other members of the Braille Working Group of the European Blind Union for making me feel very welcome this week, for having some really lively and constructive discussion and debate about some of the issues we face as a community, and I'm really looking forward to continuing to represent Braille users from the UK as part of the Braille Working Group. So thank you so much, and I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Yeah, and thank you too. I'm very glad personally to have you in our group, and also of course to have you with the experience of UK on Braille in our group, and I estimate a lot what you do in UK to promote Braille. And good luck for this, and thank you that you are here, and I think we will do a lot of nice things together in the future.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've had an email from Michael, who is asking about printing Excel spreadsheets in Braille. Michael writes, I have an Index Everest Braille embosser, and I'm wondering if there is any software out there that can help me to do this. Jackie?
I think the nearest you might get would be Doxbury. There might be a template within Doxbury to work with it. I'm not saying there is, definitely, but that would be my first thought. Other than that, probably if it's for transcription purposes, somebody's transcribing spreadsheets for you, they might have a slightly different way of doing them to make them run across the page.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because if you've got a big table, essentially, which is what a spreadsheet is, and you know, multiple sheets and multiple columns and rows, and if it's quite big, then often the print line can be much wider than the Braille line. So professional transcribers will typically reflow that to put the table into kind of paragraph form. You see this a bit with bank statements and so on.
Yeah, that's right. And the only other, obviously, option, which is becoming more apparent, are the multi-line Braille displays. But of course, you would have to justify, you know, using that kind of work a lot to buy something like the Canute. I have seen it on a Canute, and it's amazing.
Yeah, but even the Canute is 40 cells across.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If your spreadsheet is more than 40 characters wide, then that could be an issue. Yeah, you might need to take the information from the spreadsheet and put it into a document and reformat it so that it fits onto your Braille paper, whatever width of Braille paper you happen to have. So no quick fixes there, Michael. Let us know how you get on, but it feels like you might have to do a little bit of manual work to reformat and transcribe that document. But thank you for your email. We've heard from Sandra, who writes, "Hi, folks. I have completed a refresher course in mobility and orientation following the retirement of my guide dog, Rana. I use a no-jab cane along with the Lazarillo app. I'm also hearing impaired and have been using the mini guide. I think it's great. No more getting tangled up in overhead bushes. It's very useful for finding tables and chairs in cafes." Anyone else use the mini guide?
Yeah, I've heard of this, but I've not got hands on with it. It's been quite popular, actually, the mini guide. It's certainly been one of the more popular of these, like, ultrasonic, you know, mobility aids, but I've not had a chance to play with it yet. Obviously, I will be getting, I think I've said before, I've pre-ordered that second gen WeWalk smart cane. So that's something that I'm going to be having a play with that's got these sorts of features and more, significantly higher price as well, obviously. But it does sound good, the mini guide. I've heard a lot of positive things about it.
Mm. So, Callum, we should probably explain. It's a bit like a torch, isn't it, that has a sensor and then provides you with haptic feedback when you get close to an obstacle.
As I understand it, yeah. As I said, I've not had a play with it, but yeah, I hear it's that sort of torch, yeah, form factor, and you can either hold it in your hand, or I believe they do a little mount so you can attach it to your cane as well.
Sounds like the Ray, a bit like the Ray from CareTech. That's kind of a handheld little device as well that gives you haptic feedback, and that's been out for quite a while. So it sounds something along those lines. So I too would be very interested to play with it.
Sandra also says, "I wear my iPhone in a lanyard case around my neck most of the time, but using my phone in conjunction with my Bluetooth-enabled hearing aids means I can listen in privacy with my phone in my bag." Anyone else using a lanyard?
No, not a lanyard. I don't like the idea of my phone on a lanyard. I don't know why. It just doesn't really appeal to me. I can see the uses, obviously, especially when you're using something like Aira, but no, it's not really for me. I can see the uses for it, and again, that's become quite a popular thing, but just personally, no, I'd rather just either hold my phone out or just do my best to work with it.
Well, thanks, Sandra. Appreciate you getting in touch. And we would love to hear from you. What tech do you use when you're out and about? How do you have easy access to your smartphone? And do you use one of these ultrasound haptic devices for sensing obstacles in the environment? You can get in contact in the usual way. But Sandra, thank you so much. That email address, it's techtalk, techtalk, at rnib.org.uk. We've heard from Richard, who says, "I still miss the old Sovereign Player with its ability to navigate folders and spooling. It had screws so you could take the player apart for repairs, and the sound quality was good. Did any of the teams use stick players like this one?" And that's from Richard in Aberdeen. Hubert?
Well, I don't know if it's a stick player specifically, but it did have a USB cable you could plug in, where you could plug in a memory stick. But I used to love one of my favourite, technically counted as Daisy players, it was my BookSense T50 I used to use a long time ago before I got my iPhone, about 2012 days, and it had an SD card slot and, like I said, a plug, little adapter you can plug in and listen to things from a USB stick as well. It was used to be my favourite portable players back in the day.
Dedicated Daisy or MP3 player, Jackie?
I have a Sense player, which is obviously more expensive and does a lot more than the Sovereign type things. If he's looking for a direct replacement, possibly for the Sovereign, your nearest will either be the Synaptic little device, which you can put a USB stick into, or obviously the RNIB sell the Accord player. So either of those supports USB sticks as well.
Richard also makes a great point about repairability. And, you know, you can get things fixed, or you used to be able to get things fixed. And often these days, that's not the case. And I know that the EU talk about this, and the right to repair is certainly a movement. And this is something that the Maker movement and Hackspaces around the country try to work on as well. Any thoughts about repairability of your tech more generally?
There's so much of it now that just, you know, it's just throwaway. You know, it used to be that you couldn't even get, you know, your iPhone battery replaced. Now you can do that, but there just seems to be such a lot of stuff now that, you know, people say, oh, you know, it's going to cost more to get it repaired, just throw it out, put it in the recycle bin. Sad.
It is sad. And of course, as we all become a bit more environmentally conscious, we have to think about that when we're making our purchasing decisions. Well, good luck, Richard, in finding a replacement for the Sovereign. Maybe a couple of suggestions there, but let us know what else you find. There was that Solo player as well that R&IB sold for a while. So there's a couple of options out there. Maybe give the helpline a shout. That's 0303 123 9999. We are at the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you, as ever, for your company. If you have a question or a comment or a suggestion of something you'd like to hear on Tech Talk, then do get in contact. It's the usual email address. You know it by now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown and Hubert Pavalkovic, until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.